And this is Building Bridges, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. We not only go down to Charlotte, North Carolina, we'll go down to the DNC. We're going to speak with
Ngaza Laughinghouse, who is the statewide director of UE Local in North Carolina of Public Workers.
He is also working on the Workers' Assembly, a Southern Justice Workers Movement. And with us as well is Stephen Copley, who's the director of the Arkansas Interfaith Alliance and chairman of the national nonpartisan Let Justice Roll Living Wage Coalition.
And guys, we just finished a historic gathering. It was a convening of trade union leaders. These are rank and file leaders, not necessarily the top AFL-CIO leaders. They were rank and file leaders from various locals, from as far away as Mississippi, Georgia, Unite Here, United Food Commercial Workers. They must have had at least 20, 30 folks in those yellow United Food and Commercial Workers. The house is packed. We had that church rocking, Wedgwood Baptist Church. But the main reason we were convening was to get a good sense of what was happening on the ground with worker struggles throughout the South. The South historically has had these half-heartedly right-to-work laws, which have been unchallenged by the traditional AFL-CIO organizations in terms of trying to develop a broad national movement to try to organize unions. In the past, unions haven't worked together to make these sort of efforts to organize, you know, in this very tough terrain where there's a low density of unions. North Carolina, as you know, is ranked rock bottom with the lowest percentage of union members in the whole United States. So this says something about the importance of this particular meeting. I mean, the only ones going to really take this question on, since it's been unchallenged since the great effort of Operation Dixie way back in the 1930s and 40s, is rank and file workers going to have to take it on. And particularly in the present, you know, political environment where both Democrats and the Republican Party neither have been able to help us make any major advances in terms of laws like the Employee Free Choice Act or trying to repeal Taft-Hartley. And matter of fact, as y'all know, Mitt Romney is saying that if he gets elected, the main thing he wants to do is make right-to-work laws the law of the land. So in a state like North Carolina, where we have to really take on this challenge, we had various rank and file leaders there, like Jerry Ledbetter, who led the Raleigh Sanitation Workers strike way back in 2006. And as y'all know, it's illegal to strike here in North Carolina. And we had other great leaders like Brother James Brooker, another of our leaders in the UE, who helped lead the organization in terms of their ability to meet and confer and get payroll deductions, since we do not have collective bargaining rights here in North Carolina for public service workers, and other activists such as Rick Scott and Darian Williams, who are very much, you know, a key part of helping us build the kind of strong, you know, support we need to take on, you know, the right to work climate here in North Carolina.
Saladin, I want to talk to you a little bit later about specifically what's happening in Charlotte, but first I'd like to get Stephen Copley on the line to talk about the situation in Arkansas and the issues in regard to living wage campaign in Arkansas. Stephen?
Well, let me talk about living wage in general. Currently, the minimum wage is at $7.25 an hour, which is just a little over $15,000 a year. You know, it was just a mere 5 years ago, it was $5.15 an hour, $10,700 a year. One of the struggles in Arkansas we have, and it has gotten somewhat better, but is the number of low-wage jobs that we have. And I always like to do a little math. If the minimum wage is $7.25 an hour, $15,000 a year, if you buy $100 worth of groceries a week, which is really a low figure, there's $5,200. I think I read the other day the sort of the average median rent in Arkansas, $600. Well, a month, there's another $7,200. I'm at $12,200, and I have just bought groceries and paid rent. No bills, no clothing, no health care, nothing, and it only leaves about $3,000. So people are working hard. They're playing by the rules. If tried to share the American dream, and it's failing for them. So we have to push toward a living wage, and we often hear the arguments, well, if we do that, it takes away jobs. In 2006 in Arkansas, we were able to get the state minimum wage above federal at that time, and a study came out that showed, you know, it really doesn't impact jobs long term, because the more you pay people, the more productive they are, and actually more than the company benefits. And so we really have to push to get the minimum wage up to a living wage, and we're a long way from that. There's been a bill introduced in the U.S. Congress to take some increments annually to about $9.50, $9.60, and then index it, which would help. But time that really helped those folks in Arkansas and around the country that are working hard every day, and the system's failing for them.
And Gaza, let's talk more specifically about Charlotte right now. I know there have been protests by some of the city worker unions there, especially the sanitation workers, as to conditions of work there and also demands for meet and confer and also dues deduction. Can you talk about that, please?
As many of you might know, that the reason that North Carolina has this ban on collective bargaining, and at one point it was a ban on just the right to a union, is because way back in 1956, 57, city workers were beginning to organize here in Charlotte, North Carolina. And when they began making a challenge to the city council to recognize their union and give them payroll deduction, the city of Charlotte and various other municipalities began lobbying for a bill, a law that was passed, which actually stated that no collective bargaining rights or unions for any city, county, state workers. And as a consequence, that law was passed, and at first it advanced the right to public service workers to actually have a union. But as you know, it was constitutionally challenged. First Amendment gives us the right to free speech, freedom of assembly, free to join any organization, freedom of association. So that was stricken down, and we're able to organize unions, but a union without collective bargaining is like a union that doesn't have a tool or weapon to fight with. So what we've been doing over the years, this is Black Workers for Justice, which I'm a member of, and UE 150. We've been trying to organize public service workers' unions without the collective bargaining rights, but as we know, the strength of any real union is in its ability to mobilize its members and take on the challenges of fighting for better terms and conditions of their work. We've been able to do that. But here in Charlotte, for the last 7 or 8 years, we've organized. UE, North Carolina Public Service Workers Union, UE Local 150, has been organizing city workers here in Charlotte. But they have denied us the right to payroll deduction, meet and confer, and general recognition. However, they still give that right to city workers to do payroll deduction for United Way and any other organization. But they discriminate and selectively make sure that the city workers can't use that payroll deduction to build resources to run their organization and build a political strength to make, you know, to reach out to the majority of the city workers. However, over the last few weeks, we began mobilizing our members to do a weekly rally every Monday. Matter of fact, there'll be one tomorrow, Tuesday morning, at one of the work sites. I think it's going to be at one of the sanitation yards where they pull out in the morning, and we're going to have some of the members of our union there and some of the people who came down for the Southern Workers Assembly to convene and do an informational picket right there in front of the site. Meanwhile, the Democrats, after we mobilized 50, 60 of our members to the city council, said we were trying to embarrass them in the middle of the Democratic National Convention. But as we know, we have to shape public opinion. We got to create a voice through working with the community and allies, in lieu of not having collective bargaining rights.
And I'd also like to bring Ken Akala with the Coalition to March on Wall Street South and Occupy Charlotte into the conversation as well.
Yes, how are you doing today?
Yeah, and tell us also about your experience and what's been happening.
It was just a tremendous victory we celebrated for the people. It's been months and months of planning. Again, the Coalition to March on Wall Street South, we're a collection of over 90 organizations, local here in Charlotte, statewide and nationwide. I'm just trying to lift up the different issues that are affecting our people most today. As we had a big rally, stand out there in solidarity. We marched on the city of Charlotte, Wall Street South. We took to the streets, probably about 2,000 of us, and it was just a festival of people power. People were dancing and singing in the streets and really, really got our point across.
What are the specific issues, Yen, that were really raised up, and were there people from Charlotte, from the Southern Tier, who were involved in these activities as well, or was it generally progressives from across the country who were more prominent in these activities?
One of the major things we wanted to lift up was that Charlotte is Wall Street of the South. It's the second largest banking capital outside of Wall Street there in New York. So we wanted to bring light to that, especially with the Democratic Party and President Obama coming into town. So we're trying to draw that attention to that connection between money and politics, that big corporation dollars are what really fund and drive our political system at the behest of the people. We are still suffering unemployment, still can't get evicted, and all these different things that come at the hands of these large banks. So we wanted to lift that up. And those who were involved, basically it's local activists from all different areas, again, statewide and national. And we just wanted to have a day where we could bring a plethora of issues that we feel like as a people we're being attacked on all fronts. So we wanted to stand up. And from immigration, women's reproductive rights, eviction, student loans, we just wanted to have one day of unity and solidarity. And I think that we were very successful in doing that.
Stephen, I want to understand more about throughout the South, and of course, I'm still unnerved, to put it mildly, by the fact of on Labor Day, the start of a convention in a non-union convention hall in Charlotte, North Carolina, in a right-to-work state. Where do the issues that you represent and the issue of living wage come into play with the really whole cacophony of voices in this incredibly scripted Democratic National Convention? What isn't being said that needs to be and is being raised up by your coalition?
Well, and they're really direct links where you have places that are unionized, wages are higher, and health and safety is much greater. We realize that and know that. The whole issue that the other two speakers have talked about, wage differentials. When we're talking about folks living on $15,000 a year and the difference between what major CEOs make and folks who are working hard and living at the very bottom, it has just exponentially increased. So what I just hope that can hear, what they can hear in Charlotte, is that there are a lot of people in the South, especially because we have a low-wage economy, that go to work every day. They work hard. They try to raise their families. They're playing by the rules. And they're forgotten. And the system isn't working for them. There's no American dream for them. They do this day in and day out, and they never are able to get ahead because it's just not enough money. And so I hope they're remembered, and I think they are. In some of the voices I've just heard, there are the similarities to the same issues. But people are working hard every day, and they need to be able to share in the American dream, too.
And on Gaza, following on the same theme, what's your reaction to the Democrats holding their convention in Charlotte and the Democrats basically just ignoring the needs of the Southern black workers and the Southern workers in general?
In the traditional sense, traditional labor leaders have no real program for organizing in the South and challenging right to work in the South. So many of them said that they didn't appreciate their having any right to work state. It seems to me that the traditional labor organizations had an opportunity to highlight the conditions here in the South and why the Democratic Party should make some effort to challenge these very poor working conditions and lack of workers' rights, particularly. You know, as we all know, Pat Hartley has to be repealed if labor is going to survive. Otherwise, it serves as a weight to pull all the labor down, as it did in Madison, Wisconsin. Matter of fact, Mitt Romney's talking about we need to make all of the U.S. right to work, and this is an opportunity. This is why the convening of the Southern Workers Assembly to begin to pull together rank and file trade union activists and leaders and worker organizations. And trust me, there's 360 or more folks in that assembly. And they were speaking about the need for us to speak for ourselves, develop an independent voice, develop an independent political movement that can not count on either party, because neither of them have done any good in terms of improving workers' rights for the multitudes of working people.
Angaza, and also Stephen, if we were to develop our own plank, our own platform committee, and put out the positions that are imperative for this country to pursue, for government to pursue when it comes to labor rights? What would they be? What actually are the positions coming out of the Southern Justice Worker Assembly and Assembly, for that matter, the Arkansas Interfaith Alliance?
Workers need to have a workers' bill of rights. Guaranteed. I know the Union of South Africa has a new constitution in their constitution. Every worker has a right to a union, to organize one, to collectively bargain. It's part of their national constitution. Here we are in the U.S., the democratic pillar of world capital. And we don't have this basic fundamental right to join unions, the right to collectively bargain. So one of the things we have to fight for is this workers' bill of rights that calls for the repeal of Taft-Hartley. It calls for collective bargaining rights for all workers. It calls for the right to meet and compare minimally as a transitional program, the right to payroll deduction, these basic rights that workers are denied. Right now in Charlotte, our Charlotte City Workers chapter of the North Carolina Public Service Workers Union, UE Local 150, they're working 12 to 14-hour days during the Democratic National Convention. This is compulsory overtime, only getting paid time and a half. If we were in a collective bargaining jurisdiction, we'd probably be making double time, triple time, maybe, because you're working 10, 15 hours straight in a row and working 12, 14-hour days. This interferes with your taking care of your 91-year-old grandmother, taking care of your children, just taking care of your other responsibilities. So this is one thing we know that we're going to have to push for here in the South. And we've actually have some of these campaigns on the ground here in North Carolina. We have the Mental Health Workers Bill of Rights, which went before our state legislature, trying to push and win these concessions. We have also a Municipal Workers Bill of Rights that's in the process of developing. It's a work in progress. As you know, the Charlotte City workers have such a bill that we're fighting for. We brought it before the city council. But keep in mind, this is on the ground. Workers, everyday working people, not coming from the top of union leadership. This is coming for the rank-and-file leaders. And as y'all know, this has been UE style, rank-and-file democracy, rank-and-file unionism, rank-and-file workers making things move. So this is the kind of new social justice union movement that we need. And we can't do it alone as workers. We need allies in the community. We need groups like the Occupy movement. We need groups like the Living Wage Coalition that the brother is a part of. We need all these other efforts. Because we do know if workers have collective bargaining, they'll get a living wage, and this is essential. These sort of broad community church coalitions, NAACP down here, we have a very progressive, matter of fact, relatively radical NAACP here in North Carolina under the leadership of Reverend William Barber, and they've been one of our strongest allies for UE 150 in our efforts.
Stephen Copley, you're part of that platform committee. What's the platform?
We need a living wage. And that is different in different parts of the country, depending on, the cost of living. But if you're in the South, a job that at minimum pays $30,000 to $35,000 a year. I agree. If you have stronger unions, collective bargaining rights, that helps wages go up. But definitely a plank that says it's time for a living wage.
Yen.
What we want to do is just lift up the story of the people, let them know that there's another story. Just like we were out there with those city workers and those sanitation workers as Occupy, as the coalition, and we stood with them at the city council meeting. And so we plan to continue to do that, to find those battles that are being fought right here in our city streets, and join up and let them know that we all stand together as attack against one is attack against all. So that's our main goal, just to link up with all those different activities that will be going on and just help to empower them and to move a people's agenda forward.
Are there any specific activities that you know are happening from now on that you're going to be linking up with?
There's some home defenses going on as far as really standing with some local homeowners who are facing eviction from Bank of America at this moment. So that's one of our main platforms. And I'm actually at a folks council meeting right here at our Solidarity Center here in Charlotte where we're going to be going through and figuring out what are the most effective ways to move forward. So I think it's still kind of a work in progress as far as the rest of the week is concerned.
Comrades, good luck down there. And, you know, we're going to be following the activities very closely because this is not a one-shot deal. This is really about rekindling, building a workers' movement, uniting with the forces of human and civil rights to build that movement again, to fight back the forces of repression and to make sure really that the Republicans don't steal back what has been so hard fought for and won over all these years. And indeed, we want to extend the benefits and the rights of workers and, of course, jobs, jobs, jobs. We've been speaking with Stephen Copley, director of the Arkansas Interfaith Alliance and chairman of the National Nonpartisan Let Justice Roll Living Wage Coalition, and Yen Akala with the Coalition to March on Wall Street South and Occupy Charlotte, and
Gaza Laughinghouse, who's head of the Public Workers Union in North Carolina.
Thank you all, and stay strong and keep struggling.
Thank you.
Documented people traveling across the country from Arizona to North Carolina, riding in a bus in a journey for justice, no papers, no fear. We are going to share our knowledge and take action, and in some places, civil disobedience. We are going to challenge legislators, sheriffs, and politicians that have been attacking our community for so long. We are in crisis. We have more than 400,000 deportations. We are subjects of human rights violations. They're using police as an ICE agent, allowing racial profiling. That's why we took the historic decision to come out of the shadow, knowing we are taking a risk. We're about valuing the actual struggle of day laborers, domestic workers, and people from Arizona learning to fight for the right.
This bus stands for not being afraid and for being proud of who you are and for seeing the beauty in the lives of the people who are told that they're undocumented, so they must be in the shadows. The bus is supposed to carry that message that no, you don't have to be in the shadows. Come out and be a butterfly.
Papers! Bienvenida. Welcome, everybody. My name is Marco Nunez. I am the executive director of Centro Humanitario, Day Labor Center here in Denver, Colorado.
And I'm demanding now because my community is bigger than me and my dreamer friends. It's my parents, my brother, my sister, my friends, and all my neighbors.
I want to be the voice to my husband. We were stopped by a Denver police officer, and he was arrested because he didn't have any documentation. He was placed in a deportation procedures.
When he was arrested, and he was so used to being with his dad. This is one of the things that he used to wake up in the night and cry.
My name is Gerardo Torres. I've been living in Phoenix, Arizona for 18 years. I'm a former union carpenter. I work as a handyman. I have my own clients.
He's an artist. And an engineer and an architect, and has created a lot of great stuff. Over the years, Gerardo has become a friend to me, and I look forward to the day that, we wise up with our immigration laws and that he can be a full citizen.
I'm an activist working with Puente, Third Space, and also Promotoras de la Salud. I'm a queer, undocumented Mexican. I think it is very important to me to don't live on fear anymore. I want to make aware that the queer community is alive. We are part of the whole movement. I'm going to be riding on the bus knowing there is a big risk because I'm tired. I think that we need change. The status quo is not an option anymore. We have to fight for our rights. People has to know, people has to be aware that we exist. We are part of the community.
La crisis para los derechos humanos en Arizona no empezó cuando la SB 1070 fue introducida. Una nueva cara para la lucha sí empezó.
When the Department of Justice sued Arizona, we were arrested in collective civil disobedience.
As we announced the pledge that no matter what the courts decide, we will not comply.
We began the process to defend ourselves in our homes, in our communities, in our schools. And we witnessed Arizona's sample spread through many states, through copycat laws and federal programs.
Nosotros esperamos una reforma migratoria y en vez nos encontramos en un juego de los políticos, de los republicanos y los demócratas.
We asked the president to end our crisis and instead encounter record high deportations.
2 years later, what are we gonna do? In Arizona and everywhere, we have no one but ourselves.
Let's build a movement based on our own power.
In our barrios, neighbors will help neighbors. In our schools, we will continue to learn our history, despite the bans. In our homes, we will refuse to allow our families to be torn apart.
We cannot comply with hate, and we must pose that dilemma to everyone.
If the most humble among us are willing to stand up against our payo and ICE, we set an example that we hope the president, the DOJ, and our advocates in D.C. would be brave enough to follow.
Well, what we've done is we've taken over the streets in front of the ICE building, and what we're showing is that there cannot be any SB 1070s, no more SB 1070s, no more Arpaios, no more 2070s.
SB 1070 and Arpaio create a moral dilemma that we must all answer.
And we're sending a message to Washington, D.C. and letting them know that our community has already declared SB 1070 unconstitutional.
Will you work to turn the tide, or will you silently join the oppressors?
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg.
And Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.